Nader versus Keith. Mr. Spiegel.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court. Counsel for the opponent. My name is Andrew Spiegel. I am representing Ralph Nader and the plaintiff, and this case involves his attempt to be on the ballot in the state of Illinois for the November 2004 presidential election.
I'm surprised you're representing Mr. Nader because he may take some votes from you.
Well,
you're on the ballot. What do you want to have these other?
Actually, I'm very happy to be here, even though
people on the ballot, right?
Even though I'm general counsel for the Libertarian Party, I'm happy to be representing someone other than the Libertarian Party candidates who were not objected to in this election cycle and are on the ballot. But as your honors know, this case involves the constitutional rights of individuals, the First Amendment and 14th Amendment rights of individuals to associate for the advancement of political beliefs, as well as their rights of qualified.
Let me jump ahead and tell you the single thing that I find most troublesome about your suit, and that's the timing of it. I don't understand why you waited until June to file this suit. Because by doing so, even though, you know, the district court accelerated its consideration, we've accelerated, you've put us in a position where, or you put the state in a position where it's extremely difficult for it to comply with whatever order we might issue.
Well,
I mean, the military ballots have been mailed, so what, are you going to send a letter to some guy in Iraq and say, oh, by the way, we sent you this absentee ballot, please tear it up. Hope you haven't voted yet. We have a new ballot for you.
Unfortunately, we have no control over the schedule.
But you could sue. You could have sued in February when Mr. Nader declared his candidacy.
We could have sued in February, but we didn't know. I wasn't involved with the Nader campaign in February as general counsel of the Libertarian Party.
No, I'm not saying you're at fault. I'm saying the Nader campaign, you know, if you want a preliminary injunction, you're appealing to equity, you have to cooperate. You have to do everything to make the equitable decree, if it were to be issued, to as painless as possible. I just don't understand the delay.
Well, I think the delay was occasioned because they were attempting to collect a sufficient number of signatures by the June 21st deadline.
They knew they could run into problems, and even if they thought they could get 25,000 verified petitions, they were going to have to invest more effort than they thought constitutionally required. So you'd think, you know, they'd want to clear the decks as quickly as possible so they could devote their obviously limited resources to other campaign activities.
Well, there's nothing in the record to indicate why there was this delay. I can certainly speculate that in the state of Illinois, the Democrats feel they're going to carry this state. The Republicans think that they're not going to carry this state. The rule under an Illinois election code is that you can file nominating papers even without a sufficient number of signatures, and if nobody objects to them, you're going to be on the ballot. So there was no, before filing the nominating papers,
I didn't know that the Democrats were going to object to Nader because you take votes from them. So,
well, as I said, I really don't know what the reason for that delay was, but I think the main point in this case is whether or not the district court was correct in concluding that we had no likelihood of success on the merits.
But right. Now, there's a point about your argument that troubles me, which is the stress you place on the fact that Illinois is at the early end of the pack for these deadlines. But as I understand the logic of your argument, only a deadline that falls after the two major political party conventions would satisfy your understanding of the law. And if that's true, then given when the Republican Party held its convention this year, a substantial majority of the states are in violation, not just Illinois out there with June 21st, but a very strong majority of the states have deadlines that fall well before September 1st. So are they all unconstitutional?
they're not all unconstitutional. But
so what's the theory then that
if you look at the Anderson versus Celebrezze case, there's dicta in this case that indicates that a deadline 75 days before the general election is constitutional.
But what's so magic about that if you take the logic of the Anderson case, which is that the need for the independent candidate might percolate up through the political debate or the process? For all I know, you know, in August, George Bush might have had a severe heart attack, and all of a sudden the Republicans might have nominated somebody else. You know, we thought we knew, and of course, as it turns out, luckily nothing terrible happened to anybody. But I just don't see how the logic of the way you read Anderson works to say that some number of days before the general election is all that it calls for. If that's what you're doing, then why doesn't the discretion the states have to pick the appropriate number of days, given how difficult it is to verify signatures, given administrative criteria and the like, why isn't that up to the states?
Well, it is up to the states, and clearly states can regulate elections as they see fit, assuming they don't infringe upon constitutional rights of people seeking ballot access.
Now, is it your position the old Illinois rule before the amendment was constitutional?
Yes, it was constitutional.
So when Kirk Dillard, a well-known Republican senator, decided to sponsor this legislation, which the county clerks wanted because they were having trouble with this crunch between the time the petitions were filed and the time the absentee ballots were prepared, was in favor of this, he was urging something that was now going to violate the constitutional rights of the voters here?
That's correct. And if you look at the record, they assert that the reason for this was the administrative convenience of local election authorities. We assert that the reason was moving it 90 days earlier. They did not even take into consideration the weather in the state of Illinois.
But Illinoisans are tough. You know that people are out there even in 20 below. I mean, the weather is...
The weather is a definite factor in trying to get volunteers who are to go out and circulate petitions, let alone...
They didn't even start circulating until March.
That's correct, March,
and the
third week of March.
The weather isn't...
But the weather from March to June 21st is not as conducive to public gatherings as
I thought you were
going to
say
August.
It's too hot during the summer.
No.
Well, he was able to get more than a number of signatures.
That's correct, and that's. And if I could, I'd like to get to that point. Because
what's the unreasonableness of this matching requirement?
The addresses. Because of the some 32,457 signatures that were gathered by the June 21st deadline, there were approximately 19,000 objections. About 90% of those objections were because of the matching addresses.
Look, you have to have some identifying information on the petition.
Absolutely.
Otherwise, the door to fraud is wide open.
Absolutely.
And this is Illinois, too.
Absolutely.
So why isn't it reasonable
where Tom Brokaw said that even the dead get to vote in the state of
Illinois. So why isn't it reasonable to require the address? I don't understand.
We're not saying it's not reasonable to require the address. What they're doing is disenfranchising people that are registered to vote.
But not at the address. I mean, what they're doing is they're looking for a match between the voter's name and the address under which that voter is registered. Your response is, oh, well, as long as they can vote on election day, that ought to be enough. But the fact is, the state has no way of knowing if they've moved to Georgia and still haven't changed their registration. It doesn't seem completely out of bounds to say you've got to come up with the number of people who actually have that kind of match. Otherwise, verification would be a nightmare.
Well, actually, that's not the case. In fact, it's getting more and more easy to verify signatures. If we go back 25 years to the system that they had in the state of Ohio, in Anderson versus Celebrezze, the parties in that case stipulated that it would take 5 to 8 business days for the counties to verify signatures under the system they use in Ohio. The fact that we have an arcane burden...
They weren't addressing a mismatch of address to voters, though.
No, but I'm addressing the question of how long it takes to verify...
Well, how does verification work? Suppose I know that you're a registered voter. I know your name. So I fill out a petition in your name. Now, what's the process for verification? They have your signature on file?
Well, first, there's no verification whatsoever unless somebody objects. If somebody objects, then the process of verification depends on what the objection is. For example, the 5,246 objections because there was a mismatch of...
I understand you. Why don't you answer my question?
Okay. They look at the computer database, look at the signature, if the signature was the objection, look at the address, if the address was the objection, to determine if it's a valid signature.
So they match signatures? They have handwriting experts?
No. They have staff from the electoral board, a representative from the candidate, and a representative from the objector. The judge is the...
They eyeball it.
They eyeball it and give their lay opinion. Then...
That's what they did in Anderson? That was the procedure of verification?
No. In Anderson, the county, I guess, in Anderson, each county verifies its own signatures, apparently without the participation of any, either side, either the objector or the candidate. 5 to 8 business days. So if you look at the...
What information was required? Just the signature?
The signature and whether or not they're registered to vote.
The same
verification process as we have to go through here. And I see the light's up. I'd like to reserve the rest of my time for rebuttal.
Okay, thank you, Mr.
Thank
Siegel.
You.
Ms. Welsh?
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court. I'm here on behalf of the Illinois State Board of Elections members who are defendants here. Mr. Kasser, my co-counsel, is representing the objector. Your Honor, there are two reasons that the plaintiff was unlikely to prevail on the merits and that the district court properly denied the motion for preliminary injunction. One was that the election code provisions at issue do not violate the Constitution. That was the basis on which the district court...
Now, these 7,000 petitions that were collected by the Nader campaign after June 21st, now, I gather no effort has been made to verify any of them?
No, Your Honor. Because they were submitted after the deadline, they would not
be... Did the Nader campaign ask you to go ahead and verify them?
The Nader campaign wouldn't ask to verify them. What would happen is that there would have to be objections made to those signatures before they would be subject to verification, the binder check. But as to the
well, there were objections, presumably.
Well, not to the signatures that were submitted after June 21st.
You're just saying they were never accepted, period.
Correct.
They never went into
on
the pool.
Correct.
No.
Correct. Mm-hmm. Correct. Now, Mr. Kasser will be addressing the merits, actually, whether the statutes violate the
Well, you're not going to make that terrible Younger argument, are you?
I am, Your
That's
Honor.
That's such a loser.
Your Honor, indeed not.
The Younger doctrine, no, I don't understand. It seems, maybe I'm missing something, it seems to me totally, completely frivolous. Because what Younger is about is a situation, you have someone who violates the state law, is accused of violating the state law, the state brings a proceeding, could be civil, could be criminal, could be administrative, that doesn't really matter. The person against whom this proceeding has been brought has a federal defense. And he wants to run into federal court and use the federal defense as the basis for an injunction against the state proceeding. And that's what Younger bars, with various exceptions. But in this case, Nader has not violated and is not accused of violating any law, and no proceedings have been brought against him. He's trying to knock out a state law that he contends is unconstitutional. He can go into federal court and do that.
Well, Your Honor, that's not quite, obviously that's not how we see it. Your Honor, this is what this case, the state case is about, is that it's very similar to the Ohio civil rights case, the Supreme Court case, where what happens is someone brings a charge to a state agency and says that someone is violating a state law. And
Nader is not violating the state law.
Well, he was what the objector started the administration.
No, it's not a violation of state law to submit petitions which turn out not to be verified. Look, if you go in and apply for a driver's license or something, they may turn you down.
Mm-hmm.
And suppose, for example, that you know, that Illinois had a law which said that only men can get driver's license, something like that. Couldn't a woman challenge that law as unconstitutional?
Yes,
rather
of course.
Than, yes, but she wouldn't be able to get the license, so she brings the suit. Well, Nader can't get on the ballot, so he brings the suit.
Well, no, Your Honor.
Now, he might bring, or she might bring, parallel state and federal actions.
No, Your Honor, that's exactly what abstention is about. There are not.
There is parallel case, you know, parallel proceedings abstentions called Colorado River abstention. It's not Younger. Younger is very particular. Younger is about trying to displace state enforcement proceedings into federal court. We don't have an enforcement proceeding here. We have someone trying to get an equivalent of a license.
No, Your Honor, here what we have is the equivalent of a Human Rights Act charge.
Well, no, we don't, really. I mean, I think maybe one of the things Judge Posner is saying, which occurred to me, too, is if you're making fundamentally a comedy-based argument, as you know, abstention is an area with many branches. Younger is one of those branches. Colorado River is another branch. You know, Burford is another branch. Pullman, et cetera, et cetera. And the one that worries about parallel proceedings is Colorado River. The one that worries about administrative proceedings of the state taking their course, if it's very complex, is probably Burford is the best example of that. But this is just a case where there's a claim that Illinois has enacted into the statute a deadline, June 21st, that fails to comply with law handed down by the Supreme Court. Now, maybe it did, maybe it didn't. That's the question before us. But I don't see why this is out of the realm of a federal court's ability to decide.
Your Honor, under Younger abstention, if there's an administrative proceeding going on in which the state is trying to enforce its laws, which here the state is trying to enforce its laws regarding ballot access, that he's not going to get a penalty. No one's going to accuse him of being a misdemeanant or a fine or a felony or anything. It's more like Judge Posner's example where he doesn't get a benefit. You know, it's like you take the driver's test and you can't back around a corner. Well, you won't get the license if you can't back around a corner, but you can't complain that somebody has deprived you of anything. You just didn't happen to qualify.
Well, no, Your Honor, really, it's more like the Ohio State, you know, the Ohio Civil Rights case in which the court said, you know, the person came in and said that the employer was violating the state human rights stuff and wanted to, and then went to federal court while these state proceedings were ongoing and said, please stop these state proceedings because they are violating our...
Because there was a violation under it. People aren't allowed to violate civil rights. People can submit signatures that they mistakenly think happen to represent registered voters.
Your Honor, the state law is that you have to have registered voters who are registered at the address given, and if the signatures don't comply with that state law,
then they don't count.
Then they don't count, exactly. And the state court proceedings are the perfect place to bring.
It's not like discriminating against somebody on the basis of religion, which was the claim in that Ohio case.
Well, no, it's not like that, but it's still, I mean, it's not the particular First Amendment claim, but it is the...
There's no First Amendment claim whatsoever here in terms of the signature verification procedure. Maybe there's a statutory issue, you know, about whose signatures are going to count and whose signatures aren't.
Certainly, Your Honor, the Illinois has an important state interest, as the Supreme Court, every court has recognized, in regulating its state laws. And if there's an ongoing state proceeding to enforce the state's regulation of the ballot access rules, if that proceeding was ongoing before the plaintiff filed his complaint, and if there are no extraordinary circumstances, and if there was, an adequate opportunity to raise the constitutional claims in the state court, it's an offense to comedy, it's an offense to our federalism to allow the plaintiff to bring that case here.
Maybe you want to.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Okay, thank you, Ms. Wells. Mr. Casper?
Thank you, Your Honor. Michael Casper on behalf of the defendant, John Tully. May it please the court, I'm just going to talk very briefly about the merits of the case. dealing with the June 21st filing deadline and then a little bit with his address match requirement. And where I'd like to start is just by, the plaintiffs rely almost exclusively on the Anderson case. And this statute at issue before the court today is very different from the Anderson case. The Anderson case involved a March 20 filing deadline, which was 75 days before the primary election. This statute is June 21st, about 3 months later, and it comes 97 days after the primary election. And I think that the first clue that something was rotten in the state of Ohio in the Anderson case is if you look at footnote number 28 in that case, you'll see that the filing was required on March 20th, but the Secretary of State didn't do anything with those petitions for 3 months. They sat in his office gathering dust until the end of June when he sent them out to be verified by the county clerks for a certification of the ballot in August, much like we have here in Illinois.
And but what if, I mean, to take your opponent's position for a minute, what if after the Illinois primary, let's say, you know, June 1st, for some reason, something like what we happen to have seen in the Senate campaign for Illinois happened, and some ghastly disclosure about one of the candidates occurred such that the only thing left to do was withdraw from the race. I'm, of course, speaking of what happened to Jack Ryan. And all of a sudden, it's wide open again. Well, it's plenty of time yet for the Democratic and the Republican nominating convention, but the window would be on the verge of closing if it happened June 1st for the presidential elections. And I thought one of the main points that the Supreme Court makes in Anderson and that your opponents are trying to make is that independent candidates have a unique interest in assessing what's out there as late as they possibly can to see if it's worth trying to join the race. Why isn't Illinois placing an undue burden on that?
Well, I think that you have to look at balancing those interests of the state and the candidates, and that's right. And under that theory, well, that catastrophic event that hypothetically might happen, that could happen in October, too, so why don't we have the deadline be at the end of October? Well, you can't do that and run the election effectively. And so what the state is trying to do is balance those interests.
Why do you need 134 days? It seems like an awful long time.
Well, I think that the reason why the deadline got moved up, as we show in our papers, was due to the lengthy challenge process that occurred in 1998. And Mr. Spiegel sort of takes issue with that, and he says, well, the process in some states is a lot shorter. Well, Illinois takes a little bit longer, even though it only takes 2 months from start to finish. Mr. Nader filed on June 21st, and
why did it take 2 months to inspect the 39,000
well,
petitions?
The reason for that is because the Illinois system is a lot more fair than the Ohio system. When someone's petitions are challenged, Mr. Nader is entitled to defend them one by one, line by line, all 39,000 of them. He can sit there and slug it out over every one, which is a lot more fair to him. He's entitled to a lot more due process than in Ohio, where the petitions go into a government office and then you sit there and wait for a ruling two weeks later with no opportunity to defend yourself. So he's claiming, he's taking issue with a system that's in effect a lot more fair to him than the system in Ohio that was invalidated. And
well, isn't there some, I forget the word that's used, revalidation or process as well in Illinois?
Yes, what happens is it's sort of a two-step review. There's a process where they check to see whether or not the people are registered voters, and then if it turns out, if there's a ruling that's adverse to either party, to the candidate, let's say they improperly invalidate my registration. They say that I'm not registered to vote when in fact I am. Mr. Nader's offered an opportunity to bring forth further evidence that the board made a mistake.
So this is 60 days, this period, did you say?
Well, there's not a limit on the number of days, but that's about how long it took. Okay. That's how long the state thought it was going to take.
When did the absentee ballots go out?
I think the absentee ballots go out 2 weeks from Wednesday.
The military
has been out for several weeks.
Now you say the other absentee ballots are going out 2 weeks from Wednesday?
I'm not certain of the date, but it's the absentee application period begins, and then the ballots go out shortly thereafter. It's about 2 weeks from now.
October 6th, is that what you're saying?
Something like that. I think it's 40 days before the election.
Yeah, I believe that's correct, Your Honor.
Yeah.
And then the other...
If it takes roughly 60 days to figure out, you know, whether the candidate has qualified, that still leaves 74 days. Why should it take 74 days to print and distribute ballots?
Well, I think the answer to that, Your Honor, is that the state certifies the ballot at the end of August, and then military absentee balloting began the very next week. So the interest that the state has is making sure that absentee military voters get an accurate ballot. And the reason it begins so early, I believe that that's determined by federal law. And it's just so that the military personnel who are all over the world have an adequate opportunity to apply for, get a ballot, and get their ballots in.
The date for mailing military absentee ballots, you say, is specified by federal law?
I'm not certain about that. I know that the Illinois Election Code specifies that it should be, that it began September 3rd is when military absentee balloting began. Now, regarding the address requirement, I'd just like to finish up with that. The plaintiffs would have you adopt a system whereby a person who lives in Chicago but is not registered to vote in Chicago is nonetheless eligible to sign a candidate onto the petition based on the hypothetical theory that they may register to vote sometime before the election, only because they used to be registered at another Illinois address. And I think the district court properly rejected that as being an entirely speculative system. And it also, as I believe Your Honors have mentioned, it would make verification of these signatures without the absence, without the address requirement, virtually impossible. As the Green case, the Illinois appellate court case that we cite extensively in our brief, which specifically addressed this issue for Illinois elections and rejected the plaintiff's claims.
Well, who is Tully?
Oh, Tully is the objector.
Described by your opponent as a minion of the Democratic Party. Is that it?
I have not had that discussion with Mr. Tully. Mr. Tully, the Illinois Election Code allows any registered voter of Illinois to bring a challenge to a candidate's petitions, provided that that person is eligible to vote for.
Is there anything in the record about who Tully is?
No, there is not, Your Honor.
Okay, thank you very much, Mr. Casper. Mr. Spiegel, how much time does he have? 3 minutes?
The reason, Judge Posner, there's nothing in the record about Mr. Tully's standing is because under the Illinois Election Code, we're not allowed to question it, regardless of what connection they have with either of the major parties. But the fact remains that Mr.
What basis do you have for joining him as a defendant?
Of joining him as a defendant? Because he was the objector in the state court proceeding.
But how did he violate, he's a private person of some sort, how did he violate the Constitution by objecting, presumably on perfectly valid state law grounds, to your...
He was joined because he was acting under color of state law with the state defendants to enforce unconstitutional ballot access restrictions.
How is he acting under color of state law? Are you saying he
the election code
with the election board?
I'm sorry?
A complaining witness does not act under color... I mean, suppose an individual reports... you know, a crime or something to the police, and then your client is prosecuted. That complaining witness is not acting under color of state law.
No, but it's a little bit different.
Tully is just, you know, objecting. Maybe he may be conspiring with the Democratic Party. It's unlikely he's actually conspiring with the election board, isn't it?
I couldn't speak to that issue, Your Honor. But I can speak to the issue of the address match. Because the 5,246A objections are for voters that we had voter identification numbers for. These are not mysterious people that could not be found in the database. These are people who had not updated their address but were still qualified in the relevant electoral district, which was the state of Illinois. They didn't. Their address on their nominating petition didn't match the address that you could find in the database from whenever they first registered to vote in the city of Chicago.
But look, even the state of Illinois, at least if you look at the Illinois Board of Elections website, there's a Q&A part, what if I move, can I still vote? And they say, if you moved more than 30 days before the election out of your county or municipality, under the Board of Election Commissioners and did not transfer your registration, you cannot vote. So it's not really that the whole state of Illinois is the relevant jurisdiction here. If somebody's, I read that anyway, if somebody moves from Cook County to Will County and they don't bother to transfer their registration,
right,
they can't vote.
But that language has to deal with all the elections in the state of Illinois. There are state representative elections, there are congressional elections.
It also deals with the president. Actually, there's another part of the Q&A that deals only with federal offices. This one, is maybe they're right, maybe they're wrong. Maybe you should challenge this too. But, I mean, it says you need to transfer your registration.
They do. But, again, the electoral district, for example, for a congressional candidate, it would be limited to the boundaries of the that congressional district. For the state, for a presidential election, the electoral district is the entire state of Illinois.
But there's another part that says if you moved more than 30 days before the election within the county or municipality and did not transfer your registration, you can vote on a ballot for federal offices only after completing an address correction form. That's within the county. So they seem to be trying to keep track of what county people live in, and perhaps because they don't want, you know, vote early, vote often. I think there are serious state interests here.
Well, but again, I don't think it's narrowly tailored for the purpose of a presidential election campaign to determine whether or not those people are eligible to vote. And that's the crucial factor in this case. There are a lot of cases cited, but the only cases that are relevant are the ones that deal with presidential elections. My time is up, but let me just conclude by saying that that's why the American Party versus Texas case was not relevant to the district court.
If all you had was the signature of the individual, how could objectors what basis would they have for objecting?
We're not suggesting
no identifying information on the ballot.
Oh, perhaps I misspoke, because we're not.
So that's what you thought.
No,
Anderson situation.
No, we're not suggesting.
What do you want to have on the ballot?
In terms
of on the petition. There has to be some personal identifier.
Right. We're not suggesting that the person not put their address. What we're suggesting is that the fact that address that's on a nominating petition doesn't match the address that's in the computer database should not be the controlling factor if that person is otherwise registered to vote, which is easily determined because you pull up the person's name and you get a voter ID number.
I thought the purpose of, apart from the question of whether the person has moved, I thought part of the purpose was simply identifying information so that you have greater confidence that the person signing the petition is actually the person named in the petition.
Correct, and we're not suggesting there be no address put on there.
But then how would the process of challenge go?
Because they object, saying they're not registered at that address. That shifts the burden to the candidate to try and rehabilitate that signature by contacting that person, and that person providing an affidavit or live testimony in the rehabilitation process, verifying that they are registered.
That's what you want to be permitted to do?
Correct. And
that plays into Mr. Casper's point about the, you need this 134 days because you're allowing basically litigation over every objection.
That's because of the cumbersome process that we have in the state of Illinois.
Why is it cumbersome? If what you have described is cumbersome, this business of getting an affidavit.
Correct.
But you want that. You want it to be cumbersome.
Given the system that we have,
what's wrong
we want
with
to
it?
Be able to
I
do
didn't
that.
I understand that because the part of the system which seems to require the lengthy 134 days, partly it's the absentee business, partly it's this fact that you can challenge the objectors. And you want to be able to do that with an affidavit from the voter and so on. But getting that affidavit and inspecting the affidavit and so on, that takes time.
Correct.
So why do you call the system cumbersome? I don't understand.
Because that is cumbersome.
But you want it to be cumbersome.
We don't want
what
it to be cumbersome.
What is the system you want?
I would prefer a system like Ohio had. Where
what is that?
The county just verifies it.
Well, how does I don't understand.
They look it up in their records. They indicate
what. Look up what?
They look up the voter information in their county record.
And what if they find a discrepancy between the address on the petition?
Then they disallow that signature, and I'm not sure if they allow.
I understand. What's the difference between whether it's done at the county level or the state level?
The difference, at least from the stipulation reached in Anderson versus Celebrezzi, is it took 5 to 8 business days instead of 134 days.
Now you've lost me completely.
The stipulation in Anderson versus Cypress.
Is the only difference between the procedure in Anderson and the procedure in Illinois that in Anderson it's done at the county level?
I believe so.
But the same address matching and
I believe
that?
So. And other states charge 10 cents a signature to verify the signature. And it doesn't take 134 days.
Okay,
but if
well,
I could just make one final point, and that's on this military ballot and the absentee ballot. You know, the Democrats and the Republicans got together for this election cycle and agreed to amend the election code so that they could certify the name of the Republican nominee after he was nominated.
Yes, I know, but that's not really trivial, right? Because there's no question who the Republican nominee is.
No,
right?
But the
there's not going to be objections and challenges
right.
and procedures and affidavits,
correct.
All that stuff.
Although, just as an aside, he only filed, President Bush filed with 5,000 exact signatures.
I mean, really, that's dumb.
But the point is that they certified his name September 3rd. That's the day after he was nominated at
the
Republican convention.
But look, I mean, that's ridiculous. They could have printed the ballot a year ago. Well, not a year ago, but they could have printed the ballot after the Democratic convention, right? Because they knew Bush was going to be. They knew who the candidates would be. They didn't have to wait till the convention to figure out who would be.
They have to wait until the state board certifies the name,
don't
though.
Don't you realize what an absurdly technical argument you're making?
It's
so pointless, right? It's so pointless. Because by extending the time for certifying Bush, they don't do anything. They don't cause any problems for anyone because everyone knows he's the nominee. But on the other hand, if they compress this 134 days, maybe that will make it more difficult to verify these petitions. Petitions issue has nothing to do with the major candidate.
But that's why you have to look to whether it's sufficiently narrowly tailored to bring the
that has nothing to do with the September 3rd Bush business. That's a complete irrelevance.
Well, I submit that it isn't because they have to wait until they get that certification.
That has nothing to do with the Constitution.
Well, thank you very much.
Okay. Well, thank you to both sides, and the case will be taken under advisement.